Hello, everyone out there in podcast listener land and fans of Mincast in general. Welcome to yet another installment of Behind the Glass, episode number 3 of this mini-series. I'm Jimmy Byrne, and today I am joined by none other than Alec Tickey. He's the bassist, but also the producer-engineer of The Orchard. And most, if not all, of you guys went to McNally Smith, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Except for Lewis the drummer.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so if you haven't already, you should go and check out the regular Mincast show where we actually sat down with all of the guys in the band and talked a little bit, you know, got some general questions down about their influences and what we can expect to hear from this upcoming album of theirs. So go check that out if you haven't heard it yet. But if nothing else, welcome to the show, Alec.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Jimmy.
Yeah, absolutely. You take, never giving anything back. No, I'm running out. I alone can't fill these cracks. We're running on empty. We're running on fumes. You don't feel me no more like you used to. We're running on empty. We're running on fumes. So I guess we'll break the ice a little bit. Why don't you take a minute to tell us about yourself, some production work you've done in the past, before of The Orchard, and what brought you to this group and as a performer for them and the producer?
Well, I have done some work with all sorts of different styles, anywhere from, I don't know, like singer-songwriter and folky to like hardcore metal,
sure,
which I actually just worked on today a little bit.
Fantastic.
So I guess like acts that people may know, mostly McNally acts, some outside, but some that have been a lot of fun to work on have been for Marlo, the ukulele artist,
okay,
as
yep,
well as The Culture Of, who is the metal group I was just talking about.
Sure.
And right now I'm also working with, Sunshine and the Nightwalkers.
Okay.
That's like a funk kind of soul sort of deal. And it's a lot of fun.
Cool.
As for The Orchard, I originally started out just as the producer, and Ben was talking to me and he was like, "Hey, I'm going to throw this band together and we want to do this 10-month, 10-singles project. You want to help out with that?" I was like, "Sure." And he got pretty much the whole lineup good to go, and he's still looking for a bass player, and we went in to do scratch tracks for the first song, and he was like, "Hey, you play guitar, right? You want to play bass?" Like, okay, sure.
Yeah, just kind of a happenstance thing. That's
yeah,
cool. That's awesome. Yeah, I love when bands get formed so quickly like that. It's just like, oh, you do this. Why don't you be in the band?
Yeah.
It's a great way to join. So for yourself, who are some people in the music production industry that you really look up to the most as an engineer and producer?
Well, I originally kind of got into music through, I was in the punk scene a lot, and so I got huge into Green Day, and so there's Chris Lord-Alge. Seems a bit compressed most of the time, but I
sure
do like his tones.
Naturally, yep.
Also, I really like the very like raw aspect of Steve Albini.
Uh-huh.
I had some friends that recorded with him a while back, and it sounded awesome. It was really cool to hear that whole just raw like indie rock vibe coming from him.
Totally. Yeah. Were they recording out of his place, Electric Audio, in Chicago?
Yep.
Okay, nice. Yeah, I actually myself, like several years back, actually, because I'm originally from Chicago.
Oh, no.
So
way.
When I was visiting, like, it was probably over 2 or 3 years ago now, but I just out of the blue just shot them an email and they were like, "Yeah, come in for a tour. We'll show you all the rooms and all the mics and everything." So it was really cool. I got to walk around the whole space and see both of the rooms. And it's really also cool because there's a lot, I mean, the current industry for, you know, being a producer engineer, a lot of times is like you have to already have a relationship before you start booking out of a studio, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Albini has a really cool way of running his business, whereas basically
it's open to anybody who, you know, seems like they have a background in production engineering. Like, you can essentially just, like, I almost even booked a session there, like, at one point, until the band backed out. But you can essentially just email them and just say, hey, I do this. Can I use your space? They're like, sure, $750 per hour. I'm like, oh God. I don't think it's that much, but there is a big like upcharge if you want Steve Albini himself to fly in and produce the record with you, though.
Oh, I'm so sure.
I think it's like $750 a night or something like that.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dang.
So yeah, if you want Steve Albini on your record, you can do it for $1,100 a night.
Which, I mean, for a big name, doesn't seem like too bad,
right?
But
yeah,
for us all getting out of college, we're broke.
Exactly. Right. Let's get a couple records done before we start getting Steve Albini on there. Nice. Okay. Cool. Well, now I want to touch a little bit on the album as a whole. So you mentioned, we mentioned when we talked to you all as a group, about the idea of putting out an album as a series of 10 music videos, because that's what the background for the title of the album and all of that is. You essentially put out, you know, one music video at a time, right? In succession. Okay. So as the album's producer, did you have a say in this? Like, was this like part of like your idea for how you wanted to release the album, or was it more of like a group decision?
It actually kind of just initially started out as like, hey, let's do this project. It's going to challenge us.
Yeah.
We'll put out one single a month for 10 months. Let's do it. And after we got through like the first few songs, we just kind of started thinking, like, hey, we should just make this an album and maybe, disclaimer, add a couple bonus tracks maybe, right, or something. And
possibly.
I could be the one, but over time I found and I'll let you down, down, down. I love you to pieces. I love you to pieces.
Oh. Okay, cool. So yeah, it was definitely more of a collaborative effort and deciding that all as a group.
Yeah.
So, okay. So there's a lot of different sounding songs within the album.
Yes.
For example, there's, you know, we'll talk about this a little bit more later, but there's some really, you know, stripped down songs with Ben on the guitar, like really slow tempo jams, and then there's some more like upbeat pop punkier songs, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So who would you say that you're mirroring when it came to tones throughout the 10 in 10 record, like, or could you picture anybody or any songs in particular in your head while you were trying to get them recorded and mixed that you wanted to try to match them to?
Well, going with some of our influences, we kind of looked a little bit, or I looked a little bit into more the 90s alternative rock, because that's kind of where we started venturing into a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you could say that, but I was kind of just taking it all as it kind of came.
Yeah.
I was like, this is what this song needs.
Yeah.
It'll sound kind of great if we do it with this sort of tone and whatnot.
Sure.
And just kind of trying to build our own sound, I guess.
yeah, for sure. Awesome.
I'm flooded with fear, but you pull the train. Your sun-kissed face is all that I see. Wrapped in my arms, you fit perfect with me. It hasn't been long enough to feel this way, but every time I'm with you, my fears are erased. I fall in love too quickly, but that's not the case. I think we're on the perfect pace. You've always been right for me.
So where was the album recorded and mixed? And if it was more than one place, you can dive into that as well. If it was all in one place, that's fine too.
Well, main part of the tracking, basically guitar, drums, bass, whatnot, some of the vocals, that was all done at McNally Smith, which is now closed.
Yep.
Sad day.
Tears.
Some of the vocals, especially like the backing vocals, I did a lot of those, and I did those just at my house.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a little mixing room set up in my basement. I call it the dungeon. It's literally like a storage closet, but it's great. It works out really well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I do all the mixing there too.
Okay. Nice. So song by song, as I mentioned a little bit before, the album is very genre fluid. Some with slower tempos and acoustic guitars, some in-your-face songs. What techniques would you say that you used to make each song work with the rest of them as an album, like to work as a single entity rather than just focusing on focusing on them individually only? Did you put any mindfulness towards making sure that they work together as much as they work separately?
Yeah, that was really tough, especially for a couple of those songs. I will say for a couple of them, I may not have necessarily been thinking about that, but as we started getting along in the process, I was thinking about that a lot more, just so when it came around to this time, you know, it's not a huge like, oh crap, what do we do now?
Right.
I don't know, I guess just sort of thinking about that sound that I started hearing us going towards in rehearsal, and I just kind of tried basing things off of that, I guess.
Yeah.
Just trying to stay consistent.
Yeah. Cool.
It was all in the feel of the group.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, sometimes that's what it comes down to. So can you recall some of the gear used by yourself or your band members throughout the performances and recordings?
Say microphones and stuff?
Yeah, so instruments and microphones first. And then we'll get into some more of the dungeon stuff later. yeah, so instruments and mics. What were your go-tos?
Well, we used mostly our own instruments besides drums. Lewis, for drums, we used mainly either the DW kit that was at McNally in Studio 10 or the Boom Alley that's in Studio 1.
Love that one.
Oh, I love that kit so much.
That was my favorite. Cool.
And for snare, though, he always brought in his own snare and his own cymbals. He's a big Meinl guy for cymbals.
Yep.
He's kind of got me on that verge, too. So, and for his snare, if I remember correctly, it's a Slingerland snare.
Okay.
It's really beefy sounding. I like it.
Yeah, Slingerlands tend to be really, really bold and beefy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
For guitars, Ben uses mostly an acoustic electric Taylor.
Okay.
Sounds great. I've loved it every time. And for electric guitar, we've used my Jazzmaster for a few things. For Zach, he has a Fano, like, Telecaster-style guitar with humbuckers, and that thing is great. He uses that through his Lab Series amp, which is a solid state, but it sounds really, really nice.
Yeah.
It's very bluesy sounding, which is kind of exactly what he's going for a little bit in some of this. And for bass, I have a Fender Jaguar bass. I love that thing. Probably the best bass I've ever played, honestly.
Yeah.
And I'm running that through a Galleon and Kruger head, which is going now through an Ampeg 2x10.
Okay.
Cab. I think it's the Portaflex.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. So how about mics?
Mics? For a lot of the drum stuff, it's kind of varied for whatever McNally had available at the time,
because
there's multiple people renting it all
That'll out. Happen.
But generally for like snare, I started using an SM7 and a D6 actually on snare top. And then a 451 EB on the bottom.
Nice.
That thing also sounds great for acoustic, which I use that for acoustic as well.
Yeah.
Toms, I typically stick to D2s and D112 or a D6 for floor tom. Kick, what a D6 and a 57 in conjunction.
Yeah.
The 57 for more attack, the D6 for more of the body.
Okay.
Overheads, I tried to stick to the AKG 414 TL2s. And an SM7 for hi-hat.
Nice.
Guitar, I would typically put two mics on it. We tried a couple different things every now and then, but mainly I would use a Fathead ribbon mic and an SM7. And actually, once I finally built it, I had it in a couple songs. I turned a phone into a microphone for that telephone effect.
Yeah.
And I used that for guitar in a couple songs, which actually worked pretty well. I was surprised.
Yeah.
Gets a lot of that crunchy mid-range. But yeah, basically just blending between the ribbon mic and the dynamic. Bass was typically a DI through my amp head, but sometimes if I wanted to try it, I would put like a, what was it? Oh, a D112 up by the speaker and then actually a KSM 44 about a foot back.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I got that from JJ Monroe, if you remember him at all. From
I do,
McNally.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, he had a lot of interesting mic placements and choices, and I've liked them.
Yeah.
So I got that from him, and yeah, it's great.
Cool.
People leave as seasons fade. I know I've changed. Still I miss what I had in the worst way. In memories I stay, but most times for me, my mind's the loneliest place to be. Maybe I'm growing fast, but I'm learning slow.
All right, so let's step into the dungeon. Outboard gear.
Outboard gear, like in my own personal collection?
Either, like, so whatever you use for the record, so it could be either one, just really memorable ones. So like throughout the tracking or the mixing process, did you have any go-tos there?
API 550Bs.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get enough of those things.
Yep.
Both in plug-in format and actual hardware.
Yep.
So I'd always try to use those and sometimes the SSL EQs while tracking to do that to tape. And then for like vocals, I didn't say vocal mic. I started Ben with an Audio Technica 4060 tube mic.
Okay.
And then eventually I switched him over to the, it's either Wunder or Wunder, the CM7.
Yep.
German names.
Yeah.
And I would always run him through a 550B and a distressor.
Okay. That's sounds extreme for vocals, like right away.
I had a pretty slow attack time, so it wasn't doing a whole lot, but
yeah, for sure.
It's nice to kind of tighten it up before getting to the mixing process.
Nice. Okay. So on the show, I've already talked to two others about their attitudes when it comes to when it comes time to hit the studio. So we had people like Jared Hathaway on our first episode of this show, and myself for that matter, who were very strictly track by track. You know, okay, let's get this this instrument done. Let's get that instrument done, and you know, paying very close attention to small details and setting up mic placement, things like that, and then my next guest, Corey Wong, was like almost exactly the opposite. You know, he already knew what gear he was going to use, basically just set, like, put threw everyone in a room together, threw up a few microphones, you know, whatever works, and then and sees what happens, basically. So what end of that spectrum would you say that you fall on?
I like to, well, I guess I'm in between.
Yeah, okay. Because
I have certain mics that I kind of, depending on the group or the style that I know that I want to use, or at least try to use, but I'm flexible to switching things around if something doesn't quite sound as good as I would want it to or something.
Right.
I'm not typically throwing everybody into a room, kind of like Corey was saying.
Right.
We usually do it, say, like for this record, we were doing it drums and bass together, or just drums, and then I would track bass like right after because I was engineering.
Right.
And then going into guitars, and then after that, vocals, and then backing vocals. But I guess once I kind of figured out the sound that we were kind of moving into, I just sort of knew what I was going to use just to stay consistent.
Sure.
But if I can get like a studio for a day or something, I'm definitely going to go dive into all the mics and try everything.
Yeah.
In those 4-hour blocks at McNally, it was a little tough to do that.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. I think every studio, should offer time for, like, especially new engineers to just go in and play with stuff.
Yeah.
And just get to know the room. Like, I tried to do that at the studio that I work out of most, and we almost made it happen, but then he tried to schedule it at the same time as other people who had just started on, so then it became a scheduling issue and it just kind of fell through the cracks. Jeez. So I think next time I might just be like, how about just me? Can I just go and do this?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So finally, we got through these questions really quickly. What do you see or hope to see in the future of the band and in the future of your career in production? Where do you want to be?
I've kind of thought about this a little bit. I don't care for fame.
Yep.
So that's not my goal at all. Honestly, I'm totally fine with just having, like, I guess like a full-time job, doing a lot of this stuff on the side. I'd love to get hopefully see the group kind of get around and touring a little bit, or at least more. And for production, just do as much as I can.
Make it happen. Yep. I'm in the same place. Definitely. Yeah. I've kind of come to the place where I'm like, you know, it was a lot easier being at school and being around it all the time to say, like, I'm gonna do music all the time when I get out of school. You know, it's gonna be like bang, 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 you know. And then full-time jobs hit you, and that's pretty much what you're thinking about most of the time. But, but basically whatever I'm able to do on the side, you know, even this podcast, you know, doing this every 2 weeks, it fulfills me in certain ways, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, finally, do you want to take some time to plug what you've got going on? Do you have like a website, email people can use to book your services? Anything like that?
I'm working on a website right now.
Okay.
It's not totally up yet. I guess things I can plug. If you'd like to contact me for anything, I've just got like a Gmail account currently. It's Tiki Productions, and Tiki is spelled like thick. So it's Tichike Productions @gmail.com.
Cool.
Yeah, for the first little bit while I was at McNally, people kept asking if I was related to Robin or Alan Thicke. I was like, no, sorry.
Yeah, right.
And I also have my own music up on Bandcamp. You can just search that under my name, Alec Tiki. And yeah, that's very pop punk stuff that I've got going on there.
Nice. All right.
I don't know. I guess for things that I'm going to be releasing soon, I threw together a cover several months back for Open House at McNally.
Okay.
When they were still a thing. And it was a cover of a Jamie Foxx song called Babies in Love.
Ooh.
It's like a soul R&B thing. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. It's really fun. And I just threw together, like, you know, the whole 9 videos or whatever, where it's just like me doing it, each instrument or whatnot. So I look like an idiot half the time, but it's something to watch.
Awesome.
I'm going to be putting that out on YouTube soon. And then the culture of, plug them real quick, I'm finishing up a single for them this week in preparation for the Medis. So keep a lookout for them.
Cool. Awesome. Well, yeah, I really enjoyed sitting down and talking with you, getting to know you a little bit more, diving into some of your work and the work that you've done for Of the Orchard. And I'm excited to hear the full record once it's finished up.
Yeah, appreciate you having me, Jimmy. It's good to see you.
Cool. All right, folks. Well, there you go. That's our third installment of Behind the Glass. If you want to check out the other two and you haven't already, you can check out the other two open to the general public. So, you know, go find it wherever. And yeah, I'll be back again in a couple months with another special guest, and we're going to sit down and get nerdy. So cool. Stay cracking, Minnesota.